Welcome to another deep dive. This time, we're exploring a fascinating document that really pushes the boundaries of how we think about the way societies are structured.
That sounds exciting. What's on the docket today?
It's a book titled Post-America, A New Constitution. Now, the author, Don Durrett, originally penned this back in 2018, and he's since released an updated second edition in January of this year, 2024.
So this is very much rooted in the current political and social climate.
Exactly. Durrett essentially sets out to explore a big what if. What if the United States were to break apart? How would these newly formed societies go about creating their own systems of governance from scratch?
That's a pretty massive question. It seems like a really complex undertaking.
Absolutely. For this deep dive, we'll be focusing on chapters 1-8 of Post-America, A New Constitution, skipping the preface and introduction to get right into the meat of it, so to speak.
Sounds good. So where do we begin?
All right. So chapter one is titled A New Constitution, which is fitting, right? And immediately, Durrett lays out his concept of a utopian libertarian society.
Now, when I hear utopian libertarian, I immediately think of minimal government, individual freedom, and a heavy emphasis on personal responsibility. Am I on the right track?
You're spot on. It envisions a very limited government, maximum individual freedom, and a strong emphasis on fairness and overall harmony as the core values.
So it's not just about minimizing government intrusion. It's also about fostering a specific type of social environment.
Yes, exactly. And he posits that this kind of framework might actually become necessary if states were to secede from the Union and needed to establish new ways of governing themselves. Makes you wonder about the underlying tensions he sees in current systems.
That is a very interesting thought. What does he propose exactly in this new constitution?
Well, first he starts with the fundamentals, a preamble and a declaration. The preamble echoes some themes we're familiar with, unalienable rights to life, liberty, and justice, but with a very interesting addition.
I'm curious, what is it?
Durrett adds sovereignty of the soul to the list of unalienable rights.
Sovereignty of the soul. That's a powerful phrase. It seems to suggest a very profound level of individual autonomy.
It does. And that emphasis on individual autonomy really seems to be at the heart of this entire document. And like the U.S. Constitution, it's grounded in the principle of government by the consent of the governed.
Of course. That is essential to any system that claims to be a democracy.
Absolutely. Now, moving on to the Declaration, this is where Durrett really outlines the core values of his ideal society. He stresses principles like fairness, freedom, integrity, honor, justice, equality, and respect. It's very clear from the outset that he envisions a government with strictly defined boundaries, where ultimate power truly resides with the citizens.
Those all sound like very positive values. But how exactly does he translate these lofty ideals into practical structures and processes?
Well, that's where his guiding principles come in. These are like the bedrock beliefs of this post-America he's envisioning. You see concepts like, liberty to be free without encumbrance. The idea of each person being a respected sovereign being with equal rights.
That ties in nicely with the sovereignty of the soul concept from the preamble.
Right. And there's also a big emphasis on making sure that everyone has opportunities, the basic necessities for life, and that everyone is contributing to the country, helping those in need. And he also includes a strong intolerance for crime. It paints a picture of a society that really expects a high level of civic responsibility from everyone.
It almost feels like a reaction against some of the more individualistic trends we've seen in recent years.
Yes, and to really drive home the importance of social cohesion, he outlines something called country values.
What are country values specifically?
Well, he talks a lot about neighborliness, genuine equality, a strong sense of humanity in our interactions, and again, that very firm stance against injustice in all its forms.
It seems to suggest a society deeply concerned with how people treat one another, a real emphasis on the quality of interpersonal relationships and community well-being.
Exactly. And that ties in nicely with his business philosophy, which is also laid out in chapter one.
Okay, let's hear about that. How does business fit into this vision of a utopian libertarian society?
Well, this is where Durrett departs quite a bit from typical economic thinking. He prioritizes sustainability over endless growth. He talks a lot about stability over complex systems. And he really emphasizes quality of life even above, sheer achievement and the accumulation of wealth. It suggests a fundamental rethinking of what success really means in this hypothetical society.
It sounds like he's trying to move away from the traditional metrics of economic growth and towards a more holistic view of well-being.
Yes, and that's where we'll move on to Chapter 2, Government and Laws.
Let's dive in. How would government function in this post-America?
Well, this is where Durrett proposes something truly radical, even for a utopian libertarian society. He suggests no elected officials and no elections at all.
Wow, no elections. That is certainly a bold proposition. How would a government function without the traditional mechanisms of representative democracy?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? Instead of voting, Durrett proposes a system where they would create a comprehensive database of every single citizen.
So like a national census on steroids.
Yes, exactly, but with a lot more detail. This database would include information about each person's age, education level, work history, you know, skills and proficiencies, and even their interests. And government positions will be filled by selecting individuals from this pool based on their qualifications and expertise.
It sounds like a really advanced, data-driven approach to matching people with roles. But how do you prevent bias creeping into the selection process?
That's an important question. Durrett acknowledges that potential bias is something to be addressed. To mitigate this, he suggests creating specialized selection committees, kind of like review boards, that would be responsible for filling each position based on the specific requirements.
And who would be on these selection committees?
These committees would be composed of existing government workers. So it's like a form of peer review in a way. Of course, there are still questions about how to ensure that these committees are truly representative and impartial.
Yes, I can see how those issues would need to be addressed. So we've got these committees selecting people based on a national database. But who is ultimately in charge? Who is making the big decisions?
Good question. At the POP, he proposes what he calls a board of directors. This board would have 8 members, 4 men and 4 women. And membership on the board would rotate every single year.
Every year? That's a lot of turnover.
Yes. And this is key, because he really wants to avoid any concentration of power. The new members of the board would be chosen, of course, by the selection committees we talked about earlier.
Okay, so a lot of checks and balances built into the system. How would this board actually make decisions? It seems like it could be difficult to reach consensus with a constantly changing membership.
Right. So Durrett includes a provision that any decision made by the board requires a minimum of 5 out of the 8 votes. This is meant to encourage collaboration and consensus building.
Ah, so a supermajority is required to prevent gridlock and encourage compromise. That's a pretty high bar to clear.
It is, but here's where it gets really interesting. Durrett also proposes that every single year, when the new board takes over, they have the power to completely overturn any laws passed by the previous board.
Wow, a yearly reset button on the entire legal system. That's pretty radical. Do you think it would lead to instability or a constant state of flux?
It's definitely a bold idea, and there's certainly room for debate about the potential consequences. On the one hand, it would allow for a very dynamic and responsive legal system. But on the other hand, it could lead to uncertainty and a lack of long-term planning. It's a bit of a double-edged sword.
It certainly is. But if there are no elections, how do the citizens, the people, make their voices heard? How do they participate in this government?
Okay, good point. So Durrett addresses this in a couple of ways. First, he strongly emphasizes the right to vocal protest, so citizens can hold demonstrations and rallies to express their views.
Are there any restrictions on protests?
Not many. No permits would be required to hold peaceful protests on public property, although he does specifically exclude public highways to prevent disruptions to transportation and infrastructure.
Makes sense. So protest is one avenue. What else?
He proposes a system where citizens can directly petition for a public vote to repeal or overturn existing laws.
So a kind of referendum process initiated by the people.
Exactly. If 10% of the voting age population signs a petition, then a nationwide vote would be held. And if a majority of voters support the repeal, then that law is thrown out.
That's a pretty powerful tool for the people to have. It gives them a direct say in shaping the legal landscape.
It does. And to make it even more accessible, he proposes using digital signatures for petitions and allowing online voting. So it's designed to be a very modern and efficient system.
It seems like he's really trying to make it as easy as possible for people to engage in the political process, even without traditional elections. Are there any requirements for voting?
The only requirement would be that you have to be at least 21 years old. No registration necessary.
Wow, That's quite a contrast to our current system. So, vocal protest and direct democracy through petitions and referendums. Interesting. But one phrase from the Constitution that really caught my attention was the emphasis on maintaining the harmony of the country. How does that principle factor into governance and law?
Yeah, harmony of the country. It comes up a lot. This concept is really central to Durrett's whole legal philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
He actually suggests that if a government official, even someone on the board of directors, is deemed to be disrupting this harmony, they can be removed from office.
So it acts as a kind of overarching guideline for the entire government and for individual behavior as well.
Exactly. It's meant to ensure that everything the government does, and even how citizens conduct themselves, contributes to a peaceful and harmonious society.
It's an interesting concept, though I imagine there could be a lot of debate about what exactly constitutes disturbing the harmony in practice.
Oh, absolutely. There's a lot of room for interpretation there. Now let's talk about what the government would actually do in post-America, because Durrett is very clear that it would have a limited scope. He emphasizes that the government should only provide services that private companies cannot or should not handle.
So what falls under that umbrella? What would the government be responsible for in this utopian libertarian society?
Well, first and foremost, the government would be in charge of creating and enforcing the laws. It would handle basic administrative functions like running a national website, maintaining that giant citizen database we talked about, and issuing IDs.
So the essential functions of a modern state. What about areas like law enforcement and justice?
He proposes using those arbitration panels we discussed earlier, instead of traditional judges and juries, to handle all disputes, crimes, and misdemeanors.
So a more localized, community-based approach to justice.
Yes, exactly. And those selection committees would play a role in law enforcement as well, specifically in overseeing and regulating the conduct of law enforcement agencies.
Okay, makes sense. What else is on the government's to-do list?
Well, the government would also be responsible for regulating businesses and issuing licenses. They would offer a public healthcare option alongside private healthcare providers. They would provide housing and food for those in need.
So a safety net for the most vulnerable members of society.
Yes, absolutely. And of course, the government would handle revenue taxes and all that. And they'd be in charge of public safety, meaning police and fire services.
Okay, so a pretty comprehensive list of responsibilities.
Oh, and there's one more big one. Managing the creation of money, both fiat currency and cryptocurrency.
That's right. We talked about the monetary system earlier. So the government would be responsible for issuing and managing the currency in post-America.
Exactly. Now, what's particularly interesting is what's not on that list of government responsibilities.
Okay, I'm intrigued. What did Durrett decide to leave out of the government's purview?
Well, first of all, education. Schools would not be run by the government.
Really? So how would education be handled?
He proposes a system of private, nonprofit schools that would operate under contracts with the government. But the government itself wouldn't be directly involved in running them.
That's a pretty significant departure from our current system. What else is left to the private sector?
Another big one is national defense. Durrett proposes that there would be no standing military. Instead, he envisions the use of private militias for national defense.
Private militias, that's a controversial idea, to say the least.
It is, and it raises a lot of questions about accountability, training, and potential for abuse.
It certainly does. What about other essential services, like transportation infrastructure?
That would also be handled by private companies. So things like roads, bridges, utilities, even the postal service would all be operated by private businesses under contract with the government.
So a heavy reliance on the private sector for a lot of core services.
Yes, very much so. Now, you might be wondering, how would all these government workers get paid?
Good point. They wouldn't be volunteers, would they?
No, not exactly. Durrett proposes that government workers would essentially be paid their previous year's salary so that they wouldn't take a pay cut to serve in the government.
Okay, that makes sense. What if they were unemployed before taking on a government role?
In that case, they would receive a minimum wage.
So a way to incentivize people to participate without fear of financial hardship. What about job security? Would they have a job to return to after their government service?
Absolutely. Their previous job would be protected, so they wouldn't have to worry about finding new employment after their term is up.
Okay, so that takes care of most government workers. What about police officers and firefighters? Would they be under the same system?
Well, he proposes slightly longer terms for those in the police and fire departments. 5 years instead of one.
5 years? That's quite a bit longer. Why the difference?
He wants to provide more stability in those crucial roles. But to emphasize the importance of civic duty and public service, he suggests that their salaries should be intentionally kept lower than what they might earn in the private sector.
So it's about attracting people who are genuinely motivated by a desire to serve the community rather than for financial gain.
Exactly. Now, let's circle back to those arbitration panels, because they play a huge role in Don Durrett's vision of post-America.
Yes, let's dig a little deeper into how those would function. Would they have the same authority as traditional courts?
Yes, absolutely. These arbitration panels would essentially replace our entire court system. They would be responsible for handling every legal dispute, from small claims to major criminal cases. And their decisions would be final and binding.
Every case decided by a group of citizens instead of professional judges. That's a pretty radical departure from our current system.
It is. He believes that this approach would be more fair, efficient, and less adversarial than our current court system.
How would these panels be structured?
Each panel would consist of 4 men and 4 women, chosen randomly from the citizen database. Mm. And to make a decision, they would need a simple majority vote.
Okay, so a mix of genders and a relatively low bar for reaching a verdict. What happens if someone disagrees with the decision of an arbitration panel? Is there any kind of appeals process?
Yes, there is. Durrett proposes a 3-strikes appeals process. So you could appeal a decision up to 3 times.
And after 3 appeals, that's it?
Well, almost. There's one important exception. If new evidence comes to light, then a case can be reopened no matter how much time has passed.
So a safety valve to prevent miscarriages of justice if new information emerges.
Exactly. Now, it's important to note that Durrett, is very explicit in stating that citizenship in post-America is a privilege, not a right.
What are the implications of that? What does it mean to have citizenship as a privilege?
Well, it means that citizenship can be revoked if someone doesn't uphold the values of the country or if they are deemed to be disruptive to the overall harmony of society.
So it comes back to that concept of harmony again.
Exactly. In fact, the central legal framework of post-America revolves around this concept. Durrett calls it disturbing the harmony of the country.
Disturbing the harmony of the country. That sounds pretty serious.
It is. It's essentially the core principle that all laws are based on. And if someone is found guilty, after going through the appeals process, of course, of disturbing this harmony, the prescribed penalty is banishment.
Banishment from the country. That's a pretty harsh consequence.
It is a severe penalty. He believes it's necessary to protect the overall well-being and stability of the society.
It certainly makes upholding the harmony of the country a high priority. Now let's shift gears and talk about some more practical aspects of life in post-America, like driving and transportation.
Yeah.
How would those work in this new system?
Well, one thing that Durrett emphasizes is that everyone would get a free driver's license.
Free? How would that work?
To get a license, you'd have to pass an online test to prove your knowledge of traffic laws and rules of the road, and then you'd need to have an adult verify that you're a competent driver.
So no more driving schools or expensive behind-the-wheel instruction?
Nope. And the national ID that everyone would get would also serve as proof of your driver's license. So it's a very streamlined system.
What about registering a vehicle? Would that also be free?
Yes. Vehicle registration would be free as well. And you do it all online. He also specifically prohibits toll roads and those annoying automated ticketing systems.
That's good news for drivers. What about car insurance?
Durrett proposes a system where there would be a single nonprofit insurance company run by the government. This company would primarily cover damage to vehicles in case of an accident or theft.
So no more private insurance companies competing for customers?
Not for vehicle insurance, at least. And interestingly, if you cause an accident due to negligence or reckless driving, you wouldn't be covered by the insurance. You would be held personally responsible, either through fines or potentially community service, as determined by those arbitration panels.
So there are still consequences for irresponsible behavior.
Absolutely. Mm. Now let's talk about those hot-button morality issues, like gun control, drugs, and gambling. How are those addressed in post-America?
I'm curious to see how he tackles those contentious topics.
Well, instead of setting specific laws about these issues in the Constitution, Durrett Durrett suggests that these types of regulations should be determined by the board of directors based on petitions from the community.
So it would be up to the people in a particular region to decide what they want to allow or prohibit.
Exactly. So if enough people in a certain area want to ban gambling, for example, they can petition the board to enact a local law.
It sounds like a very localized and responsive approach to these types of issues.
It is. However, there is one area where he proposes a nationwide ban. Smoking.
Really? A complete ban on smoking?
Yes, he suggests a ban on smoking in all public indoor and outdoor spaces, as well as in workplaces.
Are there any exceptions?
The only exceptions would be private residences and designated smoking areas within public parks. So, pretty strict. He's clearly concerned about public health.
It seems so. What about free speech and the press? How are those fundamental rights protected in post-America?
Durrett is a strong advocate for freedom of speech and a free press. They are explicitly protected in his constitution, but there are some important limitations.
What kind of limitations?
Any speech or publication that is discriminatory or slanderous would not be protected. So there are limits on hate speech and knowingly spreading false information. But otherwise, people would be free to express their opinions without fear of censorship.
What about whistleblowers? Would they have any legal protections?
Yes, he specifically mentions that whistleblowers, people who expose wrongdoing, would be protected under the law. And in general, anyone would have the right to file a grievance with those arbitration panels if they feel they've been treated unfairly.
So there are mechanisms for individuals to seek redress for perceived injustices. What about changing the Constitution itself? How would that work?
Well, Durrett proposes a system where amendments to the Constitution can be proposed through a referendum process. If at least one-third of the eligible voters sign a petition calling for a specific amendment, then a nationwide vote would be held. And if two-thirds of the voters approve the amendment, then it becomes part of the Constitution.
So a pretty high bar for making changes to the fundamental law of the land.
Yes, it's designed to make sure that any changes to the Constitution have very broad support. Now, there's one more interesting thing he proposes. He wants to ban all advertising that aims to influence legislation or undermine the harmony of the country.
A ban on political advertising, essentially?
Pretty much. He sees it as a way to prevent undue influence by special interests and to ensure that public discourse is focused on genuine debate and discussion rather than manipulation and propaganda.
It's a bold idea. It would certainly change the landscape of political campaigns and public debate.
It would. Okay, let's move on to one of the most fundamental aspects of any society, land ownership. How does Durrett address this in post-America?
I'm curious to see how he handles this, especially given the emphasis on individual freedom and his overall philosophy.
Well, he proposes something that might surprise you. Upon the ratification of the Constitution, all publicly owned land and all undeveloped privately owned land would be transferred to the ownership of the country as a whole.
So all undeveloped land would become public property. What about people who own undeveloped land? Would they be compensated?
Yes, they would be compensated fairly, based on the appraised value of their land at the time of the transfer. And once the land becomes property of the country, private businesses could then apply to develop it.
So a system where all land development would need to be approved by the government. Who would make those decisions?
Those applications would be reviewed by, you guessed it, the arbitration panels. And they would set the terms of the development, including the price that the business would have to pay to develop the land.
So a lot of power in the hands of those arbitration panels. What about natural resources?
The country would also own all water and mineral rights.
So no private ownership of those resources?
No. But private companies could lease the right to extract those resources. Again, those leases would be granted by those all-powerful arbitration panels.
Okay, so a lot of control over land and resources. What about things like hunting and fishing?
Durrett says no hunting or fishing licenses would be needed.
So anyone can just go out and hunt or fish whenever they want?
Well, there would still be regulations to ensure sustainability. But those regulations would be set by the board of directors on an annual basis.
Okay, so some flexibility there. Who would be responsible for maintaining all this public land?
The government would take care of some of it. But he also strongly encourages citizens to volunteer their time to help maintain public spaces.
So a sense of shared responsibility for the common good.
Exactly. And he even suggests that people who commit minor offenses could be sentenced to community service, like cleaning up parks or trails.
So a way to contribute to the society and make amends for wrongdoings. Now let's turn our attention to the housing market. How does Durrett envision that functioning in post-America?
He's got some really specific ideas about that. For one thing, he wants to eliminate homelessness entirely.
That's an ambitious goal. How would he achieve that?
He proposes a system of public housing centers, but with a unique twist. These centers would be divided into different categories based on the needs of the people they serve. So you would have separate centers for people experiencing short-term homelessness, long-term homelessness, and people with disabilities.
So a more targeted approach to addressing the specific needs of different populations experiencing homelessness.
Yes. And the goal would be to ensure that everyone has a safe place to sleep, regardless of their circumstances. The short-term homeless centers would function as temporary shelters, offering basic necessities like food, clothing, and hygiene facilities.
What about those who need more long-term support?
The long-term homeless centers would provide more permanent housing options, and they would have on-site services like counseling, job training, and healthcare.
It sounds like he's really trying to create a system that provides a pathway out of homelessness, not just temporary relief.
Yes, very much so. Now, when it comes to private housing, he has some interesting regulations in mind. For example, if you were in a single-family house and it sits empty for 12 months or more, you would be required to either sell it or put it up for auction.
So a way to discourage people from hoarding properties and keeping them off the market?
Exactly. And the same goes for houses that have been listed for sale for 6 months or more. They would also have to be auctioned off.
Are there any restrictions on who can buy these houses?
No, the auction would be open to everyone, and the house would go to the highest bidder.
Okay, so a free market approach to those sales.
Yes. Now, here's a big one. Single-family houses could not be owned for the purpose of generating rental income.
Wait, so no more landlords renting out single-family homes?
Not in post-America. Durrett, believes that this practice contributes to housing shortages and drives up prices, making it harder for people to afford to buy their own homes.
So how would people rent homes if they can't rent single-family homes?
He proposes allowing nonprofit organizations to own and operate multi-unit rental properties.
So essentially, apartment buildings owned and managed by nonprofits.
Exactly. And the rent prices for these units would be set by those arbitration panels that we keep talking about.
So rent control implemented by those community panels.
Yes. And the panels would base the rent prices on things like the cost of operating the building and the overall housing market in the area.
Okay. So a way to ensure that rent prices stay affordable. What about people who can't afford to buy a home or even rent an apartment?
Durrett proposes that the government would provide direct assistance to those in need. So instead of giving people cash or food stamps, they would operate public food centers where people could get free meals.
So a more direct approach to addressing food insecurity.
Yes, and these food centers would be located throughout the country, and transportation to and from the centers would also be free.
It sounds like he's really trying to remove any barriers to access for people who are struggling.
Yes, that seems to be a recurring theme throughout his constitution. Now, speaking of food, he also has some interesting ideas about food production and distribution in post-America.
Like what?
Well, he's very big on transparency. All food products sold at retail would be required to have labels that list all ingredients, and not just in tiny, hard-to-read print. The labels would have to be clear and easy to understand.
So full disclosure about what people are actually eating.
Absolutely. And there are some things that would be completely banned from the food supply.
Like what?
Genetically modified organisms, or GMOs, would be prohibited. Farmers would not be allowed to use them. And farmers also wouldn't be allowed to give non-veterinarian prescribed drugs to animals raised for food.
Interesting. So a focus on more natural and arguably ethical food production methods.
Yes. And he's not a fan of herbicides either, so those would be banned as well.
It sounds like he's really advocating for a more sustainable and health-conscious approach to food production.
Yes, and he encourages people to grow their own food. He even suggests that people should be able to sell their homegrown produce at local markets or even from their own homes. And this would be considered personal property, so it wouldn't be subject to income tax.
So encouraging self-sufficiency and local food sustainability.
Exactly. Sure. Okay, let's move on to the final chapter we're going to cover in this deep dive.
What's next?
Chapter 8, which focuses on immigration and visitors.
Given the current debates about immigration, this should be interesting. What does Durrett propose?
Well, he starts by stating that anyone can visit post-America. No restrictions.
Anyone. No passports, no visas, no border checks.
Nope. He believes that people should be free to travel and experience different cultures without unnecessary barriers.
So a very open-door policy for visitors. What about people who want to stay longer than just a visit?
If you want to stay in post-America for longer than a year, then you would need to get a job and obtain a work visa.
Okay, so that's where the restrictions come in. What if you don't get a job and overstay your welcome?
Then you would be subject to immediate banishment from the country, and you would be added to a national database, making it very difficult to ever return.
So serious consequences for overstaying a visa.
Yes, and there would also be penalties for anyone who helps someone overstay their visa, like employers who hire undocumented workers.
So a system that is open to visitors but strict about enforcing the rules for those who want to stay permanently.
Right. Now let's talk about becoming a citizen. There would be three ways to gain citizenship in post-America.
Okay, let's hear them. What's the first path to citizenship?
The first is through work. If you work in the country for a total of 5 years, then you would be eligible to apply for citizenship.
5 years? That's not too unreasonable. What's the second option?
The second path is through family sponsorship.
Yeah.
So if